This is Congressman Lee Zeldin reminding you all to keep your radio to 103.9 LI News Radio for the biggest stories from across the island.
Indeed, and he is indeed the congressional leader of the first, and we welcome him. I haven't spoken to him in a while. It was good to catch up a little bit. Congressman, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Jay. It's good to be back with you.
It is always a pleasure, and of course, you've been very vocal. Lots of things happening up in Albany, right? Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Well, you've been on this for a long time.
Day one.
Many of these issues that you're hearing, some people are getting caught up to speed. The last few weeks, almost like the first time that they're learning of some of these facts, but for those who were listening to your show, they would have been educated on a lot of this several months ago.
So we've been on it. I appreciate that. The briefings, all 110 of them I saw, and I saw a lot of flaws in those briefings, Congressman. You know, the questions regarding nursing homes, you know, quite frankly, the governor didn't know which way to go as far as how to answer a question. Would defer to the Department Commissioner of Health. And he even gave some shoddy answers. And now look what has transpired since, my goodness. An AG report, an FBI, a DOJ investigation and undercount. It can't get any worse. Why don't we throw in a little sexual harassment in the last week, and you have a recipe for a disaster. It's quite an unraveling going on here.
Yeah, he had a choice to make. The governor made a play call several months ago where, one, he could have said that he made a mistake. He could have shown remorse. He could have tried to be transparent and provide accurate information to the state legislature, to the media, to New Yorkers. But instead, the play call was to cover it up. And then on top of it, if anyone dared to speak out against him, to bully them behind the scenes, as we saw with the threats made to Assemblyman Ron Kim. So the nursing home directive was fatal in that you had infected patients, over 9,000 placed with healthy nursing home residents. But he really made this 1,000 times worse with his play call of how to handle it. And then he told the public that he wasn't able to provide information because he was too busy. But that contradicts two things. One is, if you're so busy, how do you have time to write a self-congratulatory book? But also, two, Melissa DeRosa's admission was that the reason why information wasn't provided wasn't because they were too busy. It was because they were concerned about a DOJ investigation. So they have really they have not been following Will Rogers' advice here. They find themselves in a hole. They're digging, and they've just kept digging throughout. And they're in a bad situation. You bring up the sexual harassment, and this isn't a new issue. This has been Andrew Cuomo's reputation for his entire time as governor, even going back to his reputation when his father was the governor. He is vindictive. He is a bully. He backstabs you. And I believe that what we're seeing, which it's different than what we've experienced in the past, where you have a lot of Democrats saying enough is enough, realizing that the reservoir of goodwill is empty. No one wants to help cover this up for him. And because you have loss of life at the heart of it, there's only one right way to approach this, and it's for transparency and accountability.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I thought the most egregious thing of it all, and not a lot of concentration on this, but when you think about it, you know, you look at New York as far as being the epicenter, Congressman, right? So when you are called upon to gather data so that the analysis can be in play here from the top, because you're trying to decipher some sort of a formula here to combat, when you are altering numbers as what the state has done here, well, you're kind of changing the game plan somewhat as far as how to go about business. And that, to me, was the egregious situation in all here. Because when James's report came out and she said, what, close to 13,000, it's not 8,700. Well, that day, that night, Zucker changed his number. to 12,000 and change, 12,007, whatever it was. And now we're over 15,000 and still going, by the way. So to me, just the changing of those numbers, the fear, as Melissa DeRosa had said to the legislature, the wrath that they did not want to get from the federal government. They froze. These are all words. This is all the proof in the pudding here. That, to me, sets the tone here for a big-time investigation that has to be in play.
Yeah, and multiple levels to it, too. I mean, there's a few different dynamics. We know about the Attorney General's investigation. You pointed out the DOJ, FBI investigation. The state legislature is looking into it. There is a desire that I support for Congress to be looking into it. And, you know, that might not be it. There might be more investigations on top of it. You could have court cases. We've already seen the need for some of these outside groups to go to court just to get information from the administration. They've had to go to court and get a judge to get involved in order to have the Cuomo administration provide info. And early on, those initial press conferences that took place had New Yorkers and really Americans from all across the country tuning in to what the governor had to say, because everybody was thirsty for information. And the structure of his press conference at first was very good, because he was providing what seemed to be accurate data, and you could sit there in front of the press briefing and learn a few new things as to what was going on. But I remember at one point he had his brother on, and he made a joke about how his brother has an hour on CNN, but here it's the Cuomo Show 24/7. And that was one of the signs that this was starting to become something different. It was evolving into self-promotion. I mean, he ended up getting an Emmy Award for his ability to communicate. But to your point, the whole celebration of Andrew Cuomo's early communication ability in that press conference was based off the assumption that the data, the facts that you were being given were accurate. And he really has eroded his own credibility. And why should you have to wait for an attorney general's report in order to provide the updated information? Well, why would you make the Empire Center go to court to get info through freedom of information? Why aren't you just being transparent with the public? They really made this so much worse on themselves, and now they're facing many investigations.
And he should be transparent right now. I've invited him on this program. He's been on this program more than anyone. You know, he's been, more than any other outlet, he's chosen LA News Radio over the last 2 years. We've had him on 19 times. Why not be transparent right now? Tell the story. I give him an open forum any day. Okay? I'll move people around on my schedule outside of Congressman Zilber. If he wants to come on and tell the deal, I'm willing to listen. And a lot of people would listen. But we'll see what happens. Now, with that being said, your name has been bandied about. You know, I had the chair on the other day, Nick Langworthy. He really likes you. And a lot of people like you. You know? And they're looking at you right now as maybe the guy to take down the king. So, in essence, I know you got to be, you know, thinking about it in a big way. I know it's a lot of family and everything else. You got to talk it over. I get it. But I'll ask you this. At this point in time, does it interest you to the point where, you know what, you are really thinking about this thing? Because, you know, I look at it a couple of different ways with you. And I've said this, you know, you have carved out some incredible roads to Washington, and you have the respect of colleagues, you have the respect of Washington, you know, I mean, your name was up there with Donald Trump in a big way, and a lot of people were looking upon you, you know, you made national headlines and everything else, done a heck of a job during COVID and everything else. Do you want to go on a different highway now? Granted, you were a state senator. It's where I met you way back. Okay? You've got a heck of a career lined up for yourself. If you want it in Washington, do you want to divert and head to another highway? That's the big question I'm sure you're pondering right now.
Yeah, a few thoughts come to mind. One is I really do enjoy what I do. I'm currently in my fourth in the house, moving up in seniority, been able to get some wins over the finish line for my district along the way that were hard fought that I'm proud of. I enjoy what I do. But the other point to add is I'm a proud New Yorker, and I'm seeing it. It's in my own family and friends. We all have these stories of so many loved ones who are bailing on New York, and they don't want to, but they have to. And they're going down to North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Florida. They're leaving all the time. What are they citing? They'll talk about erosion of freedoms. They'll talk about higher cost of living, higher taxes, erosion of public safety. Cashless bail went into effect a little over a year. You had to defund the police movement in New York City, where they stripped $1 billion from the NYPD in the middle of 2020. And right now we have one-party rule in New York City, one-party rule in Albany, one-party rule down in Washington. And I'm concerned for our country. I'm concerned for our state. For anyone who loves New York City, it's sad to have to go visit it and see all the businesses that are shut down, others barely surviving the graffiti on the side of buildings that used to feature all sorts of storefronts of successful small businesses. So I've been receiving a lot of phone calls in recent days, recent weeks. People are encouraging me to run next year, next November, for governor. I am grateful that people feel that way. It's a lot to think about, and you have to make sure that if you're going to do it, nothing motivates me about the idea of finishing in second. I enjoy what I do. I would be motivated by the ability to get stuff done. I'd be motivated by the ability to help save our state. That's what motivates me, not to have an impressive second place finish. I'm down in D.C. right now. I'll come back from D.C. Later on today after votes. I'm going to spend some time with my wife and kids this weekend because I have received a lot of phone calls again throughout this entire week, and that conversation needs to be had with them because you have to have the right balance. I'll tell you one thing that would be a really stupid mistake would be for me to figure this out on my own and to walk into my house and be like, hey, Diana, Michaela, Ariana, this is what we're doing. I just decided this all by myself. So, for me, that's where my priority is, in digesting all the calls that have come in, digesting my motivation to want to help make a positive difference, and also make sure that any move that I make in any direction is with the full support of my wife and my 14-year-old girls. I mean, they're in ninth grade now, so that's a consideration, too, and we'll see in short order.
I'll tell you this much. I'm not even so sure Cuomo's going to run again. To be honest with you, I think he's taking too many hits to the solar plexus at this point in time. It's only going to get worse. That is still remains to be seen, in my opinion. That could be very tricky. So I'm sure you're thinking about that. Is this guy? I mean, would I go against it? Would he bow out? That's an interesting one right there. I don't know. I'm not so sure anymore.
It's a possibility. It definitely feels different right now where you have AOC calling for an investigation or De Blasio calling for an investigation and former staffers, Democratic state legislators, city council members. A lot of people are speaking up right now. They're very outspoken against the policies and the bullying and the harassment and abuse from Cuomo. I don't know what his decision is for him to make. But it looks like things are going to get worse before they get better.
No question. Lee Zeldin with us. Listen, I want to hit you on the stimulus thing to the vote today. You're there for votes. I'm torn on this one, Congressman. I'm looking at $350 billion that's going to states and governments, and those states who have abused the system, by the way. It's not like it's geo-targeted for those who really need it and deserve it. It's going to go to state, blue states. Blue states that have completely not stuck to the way of the right way to do business, budget deficits galore and everything else. I'm not so sure about that. What about the trillion or so that's left over from the last go around? Where are those dollars? For some reason, I can't wrap myself around this completely. I know Americans need money here, though. So I'm really torn. The $15 minimum wage, reconciliation, I get it. But in essence, I still look at that $350 billion going to areas where they don't deserve it. And not only that, you know, just in general, 9%. If we're looking at a COVID relief bill, is it a COVID relief bill with 9% really dedicated to COVID relief? I'm a little torn here.
Yeah, it's a COVID relief bill that includes $112 million for a Silicon Valley rail pet project of Nancy Pelosi. That has nothing to do with ending the pandemic. There are multiple examples like that. How do you call this a COVID relief bill when you have all these items that are indisputably separate from getting past the pandemic? You bring out the point of the $1 trillion that are still outspent. That's a lot of money. A trillion dollars that's been appropriated still hasn't been spent. You know, and one other thing for you is that you have almost half of the money that's being appropriated won't even be spent until 2022 or later. And as a matter of fact, there's a whole lot of money that's not going to be spent until 2024 or later. So you go through these different examples, and a lot of it just doesn't pass a smell test. You know, what you're really seeing is the desire with the Dems having absolute power to use budget reconciliation to get everything that they want to get. The taxpayer is a pawn in this chess game. Funny money that they're playing with. And one of the reasons why, you know, some of the congressional Democrat proposals didn't get passed in 2020 wasn't because of partisanship. It was because of this similar issue where you just pass a big bill and they instantly wanted to pass another big bill where some of the line items were the same as the last one, but you haven't even started spending it. We just passed a massive coronavirus response bill in December, and they were talking about passing this bill the next day. They started talking about this bill that's being voted on today. They started crafting it. So it's an insult, really. And when $112 million for a Silicon Valley rail project, I mean, we're not talking about $112,000 for some study, and you could take exception to $112,000 if you want to and say that that's a waste or it shouldn't be in a coronavirus response bill, but $112 million? So they really need to be more honest with the American public, because the way they're trying to sell this bill is that this is a bill that's necessary in order to survive the pandemic. It really insults the intelligence of the average American, and it's also the average American taxpayer who's being insulted. And it's costly. My daughters are 14 years old, and decisions like this add burden for when they get older in life. And it's unfair that their generation is being saddled with all of this debt. You know, we do need to get past the pandemic. There were bills that needed to get passed to help small businesses survive, to get testing out, to get vaccines going. There have been key components of some of these bills, like the Paycheck Protection Program, that was essentially life or death for many small businesses in the 1st Congressional District. And that's what the focus should be on. You should be identifying whatever is needed to survive the pandemic. That's it. I understand that means it's going to cost some money, but you can't be getting away with just throwing on another $112 million, for example, for a railroad in Silicon Valley.
Hey, listen, you're going to have to pay for that sooner or later, and guess who pays for that? So that's why the disingenuous nature of a Chuck Schumer, I mean, there's just no end to this chicanery. There really isn't, because he's not giving you the real deal, and that's why. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm saying, and you know, this is something where if we want to talk about an infrastructure bill, then you can have a debate over whether or not you should be funding a $112 million Silicon Valley rail project. You mentioned Senator Schumer. He got funding in the bill for a bridge upstate. And listen, if this was an infrastructure bill, then you have that debate. I mean, that's what happens when you have a big infrastructure bill. You prioritize what would be appropriate to spend money on to invest in our infrastructure. But it's very disingenuous, to the word that you pointed out. It's very disingenuous to look the American public in the eye and with a straight face say that this is a bill that's necessary to get through this pandemic, and then also take partisan shots to suggest that if you don't vote for it, then you're somehow pro-pandemic. You know, it's just a really unfortunate approach to governing, and and compromise to me is a word that shouldn't be a dirty word. It's necessary in governing to be able to find common ground, however possible. But what we're seeing right now is compromise means a demand for absolute power and a demand that you not only agree with our policy views, but also our way of thinking. It's a really twisted evolution of what compromise means. I'm a Republican. If you flipped the shoes and all of a sudden Republicans had the gavels in their hand and there's a Republican in the White House right now and it was one party rule, never would I suggest, and I've been in this situation, right? I mean, I've been in Congress where there was a Republican president, Republican House, Republican Senate, and I never suggested that Republicans had to have absolute power and that you all have to, I'm communicating with the Democrats, you all have to agree with my policy views, our policy views, and also our way of thinking. You can't ever expect that. We have a diverse country. We have liberal Democrats. We have conservative Republicans. We have people in between. But right now, it's just really unhealthy, and you're seeing some in the media playing along with that. You're seeing some in big tech playing along with that. And the cancel culture has gotten out of hand. And we as a country, I'm concerned about our future, and I just feel like anyone who wants to preach tolerance should actually have the ability to listen to others, to accept different views. You could stick to your principles, you can debate, you can disagree, but right now the alignment that we're seeing, not just with many in the media or the alignment with many in big tech, but the one party rule in New York City, Albany, and D.C., it's just not a good situation for our country.
It really isn't. And you're right, 100% right. I was thinking about this, this morning. You remember there was a movie came out a couple of years ago called Get Out. And it was a bizarre movie, wonderful movie by Jordan Peele, who altered people's minds in order to kind of join the fray of how they would want to go about life. And, it reminds me, my crazy mind myself, of thinking about this is how Washington works. This is how New York works right now. It's the altering of minds in order to convey a point, no matter how warped it is, coming from the mouths of babes like Chuck Schumer. So in essence, that's what you have. Hey, listen, before I let you go, and I appreciate the extra time here, I want to thank you because I know you're on this now, and knowing that you're on this, this liver fluke bill, and I've been talking about this forever. I do a vet segment here on the show, and this is one of the big categories here, and it just laid dormant. I had Tom Suozzi on a couple of times. He drafted a letter as soon as he got off my show, but it just kind of was in no man's land. And for all that's been going on, I get it in Washington, but I'm glad to see a little emphasis knowing you're behind this thing now. I feel confident. You, Garbarino, Suozzi, and everything. Listen, we need a lot of help here for our veterans, and I'm hoping to get this thing through. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a bill that just got reintroduced with bipartisan support. It's something that needs to get done. The Northport VA used a smaller sample. Normally, when you do a study, you would want to have more than just a few dozen people to study. I believe that there are a lot of Vietnam veterans across our country not even aware of this issue. There was a study the VA has been conducting that It involved a lot of different potential health problems, including liver fluke. However, for whatever reason, that study has been delayed. It's been blamed on the pandemic for that larger study, but this is a study that focuses specifically in on liver fluke. It's not part of any type of a bigger study. And the new Secretary of Veterans Affairs hopefully will do two things. One is get the bigger study over the finish line, the one that started and is lingering, just kind of sitting around dormant. And two, this legislation is one where we're going to have to work on getting more co-sponsors on. But the Department of Veterans Affairs simultaneously can lean into this themselves and not necessarily wait for Congress to act. So I guess the key is push down on every button that's available to us to get more co-sponsors where we can, to talk about it, to educate, to advocate. Also get the Department of Veterans Affairs to finish their larger study and maybe dig deeper into specifically the liver fluke issue. Our Vietnam veterans are starting to get more up there in age. This is something that they need answers on. This is an item that you talk about on February 26th of 2021, and you finally get over the finish line in 2041. Our Vietnam veterans need this right now. These are veterans who served now several decades ago, and they can't afford to wait. And you know, every day there are veterans who are experiencing the negative effects of exposure to liver fluke, and the VA really isn't doing right by them. We should be further along than just a study. We should actually be having more dots already connected, and it should be official that there should be service-connected disability and more files of veterans, and they should be getting the health care that they need. And not just a big fat question mark, which has been lingering here for a while as to whether or not this is really even an issue. We know it's an issue. Now we need the VA to confirm that.
We'll keep on it. I know you will. And we will follow your trek as far as some of the other things as well. Can't thank you enough for a few extra minutes here on a Friday morning. Have a wonderful weekend. Big day today with a houseboat. Enjoy your trip back up. Lots of contemplation. I know you will have, and we look forward to some more things down the road here. Thanks again, sir.
You got it. Thanks, Jay. Have a great day.